Thank you, Mr. Young. Good afternoon to all of you. It's good to be here with all of you observing the Holy Sabbath day. As many of you know, we bet our life on the Bible being the Word of God. But not all people think the Bible is written by God or inspired by God. They criticize it and try to change it constantly. And, the U.S. is supposed to be a nation under God, but it's getting less and less more that way, it seems like. The universities and colleges don't teach the Bible anymore, I don't think. Very few of them do. So the Bible is criticized quite strongly by the world, those in the world. And one book that they particularly do not like is the book of Daniel. And so what I'm going to do today, I'll just give you my title. My title is Answering the Critics About the Book of Daniel. And of course, I'll have to tell you what the criticisms are before I can answer the questions that they raise. But Daniel is a very important book. It talks about all kinds of events that didn't happen during Daniel's time, but was to happen later. So how do people try to marginalize the book of Daniel? Well, there are mainly four different ways that they criticize the book, and I would like to list those. Number one, they say Daniel was not composed in the 6th century B.C., but rather someone posing as Daniel wrote it in about 165 B.C. Now, 165 B.C. was roughly when the Maccabean revolt took place. So that's what they claim, and they claim there are indications that that's true. Number two, they say some Greek words are used in Daniel, and yet Daniel was supposedly written in Hebrew and a few Aramaic words. But they say there's some Greek words there. So they said, something's wrong here. Where did those Greek words come from? Number three, they say Daniel contains historical errors. And they say, why those errors? That's because this person writing the book didn't really live back there, back at that time. He was just trying to recreate history. And they say there are errors in the book. And number four, they claim that there's no proof that Daniel ever existed. So we're going to cover those and answer that criticism. And as I've already stated, they say the book was written during the Greek period of about 165 B.C., and the book itself says it was written about 537 B.C. because Daniel lists who was ruling at that time and so on. Now, one of the problems with this theory, this theory, by the way, as some people call it the Maccabean theory, and they use that name because it was written during the time of the Maccabees, and other people just don't name it at all. But the problem with that is this theory was formulated about 1890, somewhere in there, and I know the person's name, but I can't pronounce it, so I won't try. But anyway, he came up with this idea that this book is a fake, and it was written by some shyster, and he just, was masquerading as Daniel. But after this thing was, after this theory was generated, they found things that just absolutely disprove it beyond question. For example, there's a thing called the Elephantine Papyri, and it was written long before the it was written long before the Greek period, and it, as a matter of fact, there's no doubt about it. It dates back to 600-700 BC, so it was written approximately the same time that Daniel was written. And so what scholars have done is they compared the two documents, the Elephantine Papyri and Daniel, and guess what? The style and text style match perfectly. They match perfectly. Why is that? It's because Daniel was written at the same time period that the Elephantine Papyri was written. Now, how do people tell when something was written? Well, they have people called paleographers, and a paleographer is trained in looking at text and words and so on, and he can tell, he or she can tell when it was written. I mean, the earmarks are just unmistakable to someone who is trained. So this word paleography is just two simple Greek words. Paleo means old. Probably some of you know about paleo diets and that kind of thing. Paleo means old, and graphology means writing. So old writing, that's what it means. So what I did is I want to show you that this isn't rocket science, because even though I know none of you, well, I don't think any of you are paleographers, but we're going to look at a slide, if we can show it now. We had some problems earlier. There it is. Now, this actually was copied from a book, and it's called Wycliffe's Bible, and it was made in 1380. Now, if I claim that that Bible was written in 2021, would you believe me? I doubt that you would believe me. So look at the words there. It says, "For God so loved the world." See the word. The this doesn't work too good, does it? See the word there? That's love. We spell L-O-V-E-D, but Wycliffe put a U there. Why? Because the V was not in use in 1380. Apparently, I really didn't check that, but I'm fairly certain of that anyway. Then this is, by the way, this is John 3:16. If you didn't already know it, I'm sure you did. It says that he gave, G-A-F. What does that mean? That means that's what we spelled G-A-V-E. But at the time, the V was not in use, so they spelled it that way. Then it says his, O-O-N. What word is that? That's not only. Don't try to make only out of it. That's own, O-W-N. And so he's saying he gave his own begotten son. And see, begotten hardly makes sense to us, but since we know what's being said, we can tell what he's saying. And S-O-N-E is son. That's the way they spelled son back then. So, you know, none of us are experts. I don't think, in paleography, but I mean, it's a simple matter to see that that is dated. And it just happens to be dated to 1380, 640 years ago. So we know that language changes, it evolves, and you can see there the evolvement that took place. So I made a note that there are only 13 words there, and five of them are different from our word, our modern words. So it's quite obvious that that is very old writing. So what does this say? This says that Daniel could not have been written in the Greek period. It had to be written in the time frame that Daniel said he was in, which is 537 BC. And scholars have actually looked at many different documents, and they can tell that this idea that Daniel was written in the Greek period is just basically baloney. The next objection I'd like to cover is the so-called scholars say there are three Greek words in Daniel. And so they say, see, Daniel was writing in the Greek period, and he was, you know, posing as though it wasn't, but he slipped up and used three Greek words. Well, let's turn to Daniel 3, and I'll show you those three Greek words, supposedly Greek words. And I just want to read one verse. This is the this is the edict of Nebuchadnezzar that when you he erected this idol, and then when they played all the music, you're supposed to stand up and worship the idol. Verse 5 says, well, verse 4 says, then a herald cried aloud, to you it is commanded, O peoples, nations, and languages, that at the time you hear the sound of the horn, the flute, the harp, the lyre, and the psaltery in symphony with all kinds of music, you shall fall down and worship the gold idol that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. Well, the three words that they claim are Greek is harp, psaltery, and symphony. And they might be Greek. However, other scholars say, well, we're not so sure. They could be some kind of a hybrid word that Daniel wrote. One of the problems is that this is in the section that was in Aramaic. You know, Daniel's written in both Hebrew and Aramaic, and this is a section that's in Aramaic. So what can we learn from that? Aramaic was not Daniel's first language. It was his second language. And so if he did use some words that were Greek, that would be understandable since he's writing in his second language. I think I turned two pages, that won't work. So how significant is this that three words appear in Daniel? How many words are in Daniel? 11,200. And so they're saying out of 11,200, three Greek words showed up, and that's significant. Well, it's not significant at all if you know anything about languages. The thing about music and musical instruments, they have a tendency to travel. They travel from one nation to another, one culture to another. That's just the way it works. And if you know anything about language, you understand that. In addition, it's not really significant that that Daniel used three Greek words. There's a document called Homer's Iliad, and that was written in the 8th century B.C., long before Greek was common anywhere. And one of the words that Daniel used, Homer's Iliad contains. So that shows that long before the Greek period, Greek words were extant. How and why, I'm not absolutely sure, but we just know that they were. You can't take an era and make it, you know, just say it fits in a certain slot. It extends both ways. So sort of a summation of this thing is to this way. It says there are three loan words out of 11,000, insignificant, big deal. And I'll explain that further later. And the three Greek words appear in the Aramaic section, which is Daniel's second language. And not all scholars agree that they're actually Greek words. You can't actually prove that they're Greek. They might be some kind of a jumbled hybrid of different languages. One scholar remarked that only three Greek words indicates that Daniel was not written in the Greek period. If it was, there should be more than three. I mean, if he was writing during the Greek period, he would have known many Greek words, and he probably would have used a few. Again, an indication that their theory is wrong. And as I stated earlier, musical instruments and musical terms tend to become loan words. So what I'd like to do now is to show my second slide. We had some issues with the slide projector and my program. Notice it says the piano, the violin, and the mandolin are stringed instruments. Now, you didn't learn anything there new, but I wanted to make a simple sentence, and I used all English words, didn't I? No, I didn't. There are three words in that are foreign words. Can you guess what they are? Piano, violin, and mandolin, musical instruments. Remember I said musical instruments tend to travel. They go from one culture to another, one nation to another. Piano is Italian, violin is Italian, mandolin is supposedly Italian, but it probably is a loan word from some other nation or culture. So what I'm showing here is that the idea that some loan words showed up in a document means absolutely nothing. It means absolutely nothing. Let me tell you a true story that illustrates this, that illustrates how music and musical instruments and such things travel. There was a college student, he was a foreign exchange student, and he was applying to a U.S. university. And he was at the desk there, and the clerk was trying to get him to fill out this form, and he came to the spot where he's supposed to write down his date of birth. And, you know, the clerk told him what she wanted. And he said, I don't know. He didn't know. You know, they were going nuts trying to figure out how to make him understand what to fill out. And so there was an American student standing nearby, and he started doing this. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. And the foreign student said, ah, yeah. So he knew exactly what to do. He wrote down his date of birth. And the American student says, same song, worldwide. Now, I don't know if he's right in saying that, but that's what he said. So the next point that I need to cover is, I want to do one more thing. Most of you know I'm not multilingual. You all know that, right? I don't speak Spanish. I don't speak much of anything, and have a rough time with English sometimes. But I'm going to demonstrate something to you today. It's not there now. Remember the word? That's okay. Piano. I'm going to say piano in four different languages. And I'm going to do a good job, too. First, I'm going to say piano in Japanese. Okay, ready? Piano. Now I'm going to say it in Vietnamese. Piano. Then I'm going to say it in Spanish. Piano. Then I'm going to say it in Latin. Piano. You get the point, right? It's a loan word. Piano just travels all over. Violin does much the same thing, but not quite as readily. So again, their proof is not worth much. Next thing I want to cover is the objection of Daniel being a 6th century competition because they made historical errors. And one of the errors I want to cover is the name Belshazzar. Let's turn to Daniel 5. So what's wrong with Belshazzar? What's wrong with it is that historians didn't know that he existed. Belshazzar doesn't seem to be in the historical records. As a matter of fact, two of the trusted Greek authorities, Herodotus and Xenophon, didn't know of Belshazzar. They thought the last king of Babylon was Nabonidus. I guess that's the way you say it. So let's look a little bit here in Daniel 5. Daniel 5, verse 1 says, Belshazzar, the king, made a great feast for 1,000 of his lords and drank wine in the presence of 1,000. Now, of course, the historians say, see, Belshazzar is just made up. He didn't exist. And Daniel was wrong when he wrote that. And the reason he was wrong, he was writing, hundreds of years removed from the time of Daniel. And then it talks about what they're going to do and so on. But then I want to go to let's see. Anyway, they talk. I don't want to read all that. I don't have the time. But Belshazzar or Nebuchadnezzar had a not Nebuchadnezzar. Was it Nebuchadnezzar? It's actually Nabonidus, I guess, that had their dream. Anyway, they had the dream, and no one could answer the thing. They could answer the dream, but Daniel could answer it. And then I want to, for sake of time, skip down to verse 29. After Daniel gave the understanding to the dream, they said this, then Belshazzar gave the command, and they clothed Daniel with purple, put on a chain of gold around his neck, and made a proclamation concerning him that he should be the third ruler in the kingdom. And historians say, what does that mean? Third ruler? If Daniel is three, who's one and two? Because we don't know of one and two. We only know of Nabonidus. And So what gives? They didn't know about Belshazzar. What the deal was is Belshazzar was ruling with Nabonidus, and so that Daniel was made the third ruler. Of course, they say that's an error, but it isn't, because later they found texts that prove Belshazzar was real and he did exist, and so on. So Daniel again was right, and the expert historians were wrong. Daniel did become the third ruler, and Belshazzar was the second one. Now, I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on this one, but it says critics have claimed there's no proof that Daniel ever existed. And as far as I know, we haven't found any archaeological finds that, you know, prove Daniel was lived during that time. But we have a lot of texts that prove it. For example, Ezekiel mentions Daniel by name. I think we should turn there. Ezekiel 14. Yeah, we read this in Bible study recently. Verse 14 says, even if these three men, Noah, Daniel, and Job, were in it, they would deliver only themselves by their righteousness, says the eternal God. So Ezekiel mentions Daniel, and we know Ezekiel is inspired. And also, there's very little controversy about the date of Ezekiel. I think even the scholars agree with that. Then there's the Dead Sea Scrolls. The Dead Sea Scrolls refer to Daniel as a prophet. And if he had written during the same time they were writing, they wouldn't consider him a prophet, because some of the things he wrote were already passed and so on. It just didn't make any sense. But the big proof is in Matthew 24, and I'm sure you know what that says, but we'll read it anywhere. Matthew 24, verse 15. This is Jesus himself speaking. It said, therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet. He didn't say Daniel the righteous man. He said Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, and so on. So Jesus himself mentions Daniel and calls him a prophet. So that doesn't mean anything to the so-called scholars, but it means a lot to us. We know that Christ knows what he's talking about. One other minor point that I could bring up is that these modern scholars say that Daniel was not placed in the right division of the Old Testament. You know, there was the Old Testament was divided up into the law, the prophets, and the writings. And Daniel was placed in the writing. So they say, see, they didn't consider him a prophet. Well, the answer to that is the three divisions of the Old Testament scroll was not inspired. As a matter of fact, the Septuagint changed it all around, and our King James Bible and most modern Bible follow the Septuagint listing. So the threefold, there's no way of proving that the Jews actually did divide the scrolls up into three divisions. I mean, it's a tradition, and most people think it's true, and Jesus himself mentioned three divisions, but in the Dead Sea Scrolls, they found a complete scroll of Isaiah, and it wasn't with the other scrolls. It was by itself. It was a scroll by itself. So that proof doesn't is not very strong as well. So anyway, let me say that by way of conclusion, we absolutely know that Daniel was written when it said it was written. The evidence is really overwhelming. There's more that I could add if I had gone further into it. And you could actually do your own study and prove beyond doubt that Daniel is genuine. And, of course, we already knew that. It's the Word of God, right? We know it's genuine.